General Motors on safari. Here is adventure. Excitement. And danger. General Motors and their dealer organization throughout Southern Africa are proud to present another program in their current series, bringing you the African bushveld of today and yesterday in dramatized fact, fiction, and true life documentary. General Motors on safari.
Hughes was the fourth member of the party. He was the one who had refused the third light. Reggie was funny that way. Funny, too, about a lot of other things. Reggie was a gentleman ivory hunter, ex-Harrow and Trinity College. Harold Blish had distinguished himself at the Battle of the Marne in 1914. Barrington was fat, the best bush cook on the continent. Hinderwood was the youngest of the party. He liked guns and shooting things. Best of all, he liked shooting elephants. Come to that, they all did. The year was 1928 or thereabouts. The place, Tanganyika, the wrong side of the Great Escarpment, which provides a passage through to the vast Usanga Plains in the Southern Highlands. Early to bed, early to rise.
The rule of every good ivory man. Tomorrow might be a wonderful day.
Tomorrow was in fact to be commonplace. But another day, that was the day of the 13th elephant. Subscribed to the belief that elephants go to a certain place to die. A big game hunter once went on a world tour showing films of what he was pleased to call elephants' graveyards. His pictures showed large collections of skulls complete with tusks. I still don't believe in a communal place of death for the big tuskers, although there are many stern critics constantly bringing up big guns to swear I'm wrong. No elephants' graveyards that year. The year of the 13th elephant. But Reggie Hughes believed emphatically that a man, if he searched hard enough and for long enough in the Usanga Plains, could find a legendary elephant cemetery and make himself a fortune. 1928, then, or close enough not to worry. The four men and their American truck had negotiated the 600-foot escarpment by midday on the morrow. At the bottom, on the other side, was a clear, fast-running stream. From this place to the best hunting grounds lay 50 miles of semi-desert, fine, silty sand of volcanic origin.
Red, I told you, I don't know how many times, long before we left Dar es Salaam, what my ideas were on the elephant graveyard. I don't believe it, but I know the plains are alive with elephants at certain times of the year, this being one of them. Now, I'm with you all the way. Only I don't look for dead jumbos lying in a circle. I look for live jumbos, all in a herd with lots of big tusks. Pass the salt, Colin.
Mm.
We'd better make tracks. We want to be in elephant country by tomorrow morning.
Yeah. The major's right, Reggie. People die and other people bury them in cemeteries. Plots of land laid aside for the purpose. Waste of good land, I reckon, but that's neither here nor there. Now, elephant cemeteries convey to me exactly the same meaning. The only difference being that poor old Jumbo can't rely on his relations and friends to carry him to a quiet, pleasant place where he lay down his trunk, close his eyes, and die a decent death.
So the elephant goes to a special place because no one will carry him there. He's too big. It's only elephants who do this. Antelope and things don't congregate to die.
Well, of course they don't, old boy. But even if they did, they're eaten jolly quickly. They're down to the last bone. Elephants are big chaps and tend to hang around for quite a while after death. Well, nothing much eats them, you see. Even a hunter who shoots an elephant for its tusks will leave the skull. The bones of the elephant are too big for the scavengers to handle. They stay for a long time.
You're fighting Darwin, you know, Harry.
Oh. I hope there's some left.
Reggie Hughes had spilt the salt. It was kept in a small cocoa tin, lined with leaves to maintain dryness. The lid came off as Hughes dropped it. The other three continued their meal in the escarpment's shade, whilst Reggie, ceremonially, took some of the spilt salt between his fingers and cast it over his left shoulder with his right hand. He then stepped forward 5 paces and repeated his action. Harold Blish raised his eyes to heaven and then studied his fingernails. Dick Henderwood grinned and got into the truck.
Let's go. Come on, chap.
Kinderwood, who'd observed well the throwing of the salt over the old Harrovian's left shoulder, wondered many times in the years which followed why fate double-crossed the man who refused the third light.
Practically dry, Dick. We need more water. Can't touch the drinking water.
Hut's over there. See him? No more than a quarter of a mile.
Yeah, take 3 cabs.
I'll come too, Dick.
Well, take a rifle. If they're Elabar, they might cut your throats and eat you.
If they're Elabar, I know their lingo, and that they respect.
The settlement was a small one, no more than 10 huts. Blish assumed that the headman would give permission for them to replenish their water supply, but he was to be disappointed. It was nearly 2 hours later before Dick Henderwood and Reggie Hughes returned, without water.
You've only got yourself to blame.
It isn't reasonable to expect anyone to believe that a community of people live out here in the middle of nowhere without water. I reckon there must be some of the bally stuff somewhere. Anyway, he couldn't understand.
These people don't speak English, chum, but he knew by your tone what you meant.
You told them you thought they were hiding water from us, did you, Reg?
I told them nothing. I don't speak the lingo.
I've just said they knew what you meant.
All right, hold on, hold on. Did you offer them meat?
Plenty of meat.
Well, when we shoot elephant, they'll get all they need.
I did. They still wouldn't give us any water because they haven't got any.
Well, how do they know?
They've lived here for years. Their forefathers did before them. Water's got scarcer and scarcer. Now they grow a species of watermelon, unsweetened. They get liquid from the melon. You don't believe them, Harry. Go and take a look. They haven't got water. None of them have had a wash in a month of Sundays. Nearest water's where we've just come from, the escarpment.
At the end, before we came away, what did the headman say? To me. I couldn't understand.
Oh, forget it.
Yes, but...
Reggie, I said, forget it. I don't think there'll be trouble, but we'd better mount guard tonight, Harry. We can't do much now, till tomorrow anyway, but a guard's necessary, I reckon. They're pretty sore. To accuse them of lying is a big sin in their code book.
It wasn't my fault. I naturally thought they were lying.
All right. Let's get organized. Reggie Hughes had indeed lost his temper at the village of the Amabau. Henderwood had translated the head man's words to his companion, and nothing would convince him at first that these poor natives weren't hoarding water. The Amabau understood few words of English, but anger and accusation is universal. Destitute though they were, the tribe had pride, great pride, and the spirits of their ancestors, who had scraped a living from the barren land for generations before them, were in their eyes as fine a bevy of ghosts as an honest native could possibly put his trust and hope in. To insult them was to insult the ghosts. What the headman had screamed back at Reggie, Henderwood had omitted to say. He knew the other's weakness for superstition. Any man who was frightened to take the third light from an offered match would not, should not, hear what the little, wizened old leader had shouted. But it worried Hughes that night. It worried him so much he couldn't sleep. At 3, knowing that the early morning watch was Dick Henderwood, and that he himself would be called to relieve him at 4 o'clock, Reggie walked over to the truck where Dick sat, huddled in a coat of sheepskin, smoking a cigarette.
Who's that?
Only me. Reggie.
You're an hour early. You better hop it back.
I want to talk to you.
Tomorrow we are going to find the elephant. I feel it in my bones. But no graveyard, Reggie. Elephants go to rivers to die, not prodded by some occult power. Just to drink before they die.
Elephants haven't really come here to talk about graveyards. I want to know what that headman said to me. I saw your face. It was something bad, wasn't it? I heard the way you answered him back. What was it he said to me?
You should have held your tongue, you know. Or at least said what you thought in a way he wouldn't recognize.
What was it, Dick?
Oh, nothing.
I saw your face. You were angry when he said it.
Sometimes a man forgets that all men are equal in wild places. But a white man needs water just as much as a black man. More, in fact. When you insulted him and his tribe, he gave you as good as you gave him. I was angry, too. Not for long. Because I would have said the same had I been him. The worst thing you call the people of his tribe is mean. They pride themselves on giving friendship to strangers.
But what did the bounder say, Dick?
Oh, just forget it. You've got nearly an hour before you come on.
I demand to know. Stop treating me like a...
Like a what? There are some things you, of all people, shouldn't know.
Me? Why me?
Oh, shut up, shouting. Keep your voice down. Because you're a funny sort of man to come out here after elephants. Throwing spilt salt over your shoulder, refusing a lighted match because two others have had it before you, and the rifle Adams dropped in the store in Dar es Salaam. You held us up 3 weeks while he got another from Mombasa. A perfectly good rifle.
He dropped it. I'm not using a rifle that's been dropped by another man. Dick, there are certain rules I live by.
Your life's too complicated, Reggie. You can't live like that. Not in the bush.
What did the head man say?
Oh, get back.
What did he say, confound you?
Do you really want to know? He says that you're going to die. Soon.
What?
He said you've come here after elephant, and soon an elephant's going to kill you. An elephant unlike any other you've seen in the whole of your life. An elephant with great tusks, worth a lot of white man's money. But this elephant will have no trunk. Now, get back to your bed, and mind you walk twice around it before you get in.
Hold it. Something eaten alive.
Some of them are big beggars. A lot of ivory over there. No doubt about it. Give us the glasses again, Dick.
Yes, here you are.
How many hours walking, would you say?
Oh, 5, 6 at the speed we'll have to go at. What time is it?
Nearly 9.
They're not feeding.
There's nothing to feed off. They seem lost almost. There must be water around somewhere.
Herd wouldn't be stupid enough to hang around in a district that's as short of water as this is supposed to be. If there really isn't any. How many?
30, 40. Job to tell. They're closely bunched. Can't really see what the ivory's like at this range. Caught sight of plenty of white, though. Might be big. I think we'll make tracks.
Where's Reggie?
Yes, where is the bounder?
Back of the truck.
I heard the two of you last night, getting your watch. What was it about?
Nothing.
Disagreement,
that's all.
Right. Let's chase after our tuskers. 5 or 6 hours is optimistic. Before the four men were within shooting range of the herd, the sun was going down fast. The herd didn't move all day. It rested on the very edge of the Sunga Plains. The semi-desert faded away, and the first sparse grass of the veldt took over. There were trees, poor trees, for the season was a dry one. The hunters rested, weary from the day's march, behind an outcropping of volcanic rock lava, over which the first grass was struggling to gain ascendancy. During the march, the men had spoken but little. Reggie Hughes had spoken not at all. The sun had been strong. He kept his eyes upon the ground, glancing only occasionally to the wavering, broken line of horizon, a line which had a habit of rearing and bucking and taking on the shape of a giant elephant, a mammoth as great as the whole of Tanganyika, a beast without a trunk.
Cigarette ready?
Not for me, thanks.
Darn cold. No fire tonight. We're no more than 1/2 mile from the herd. First light we hit them. I don't want them to get wind of us before then.
Oh, I'm going to freeze to death in the night. Oh,
not in these sleeping bags. How's the water, Colin?
I'm beginning to smell. But there's ample enough to get us through another day here. Back to the truck after the shooting is finished, and then back to the escarpment. We'll detail the yellow bow to bring back the ivory. They'll do it for the meat. There's some big stuff there, Harry.
I should set it up for a bit. Won't last forever, this. One day they'll impose controls, and then the days of the ivory hunter will be over. Forever. The men slept. The herd, moving no more than 3/4 mile away, fed contentedly. All but one fed contentedly. One, a bull, already feeling death imminent, and a last exile of necessity, had wandered from the herd to where the felt grass was lusher. The small, insect-rimmed eyes had not seen the man-twisted vine looped through a system of small saplings. The old animal had smelt nothing, sensed nothing, until it was too late and he was imprisoned, the great trunk held fast, held painfully, whilst the yellowing tusks swung viciously, seeking an enemy like giant pendulums. The herd grazed on. Dick heard the beast trumpet from a long way away and sunk deeper into the sleeping bag, dreaming of a fortune of ivory. The major heard it too in sleep and dismissed it. Colin Barrington smiled as the noise filtered through slowly into his subconscious. Reggie Hughes heard it too and was afraid.
Bring some brandy, eh?
Reggie.
Harry, you... The gun was dropped. You must never use a gun that...
Brandy, drink this old son.
Come on, quick now. Just a big hole. Did you see it, Dick? Like the headman said, no trunk. No trunk.
Hell, what? Just take some of the brandy, Reg. You feel all right now? Dreaming, that's all. Dreaming. Ah, the bush tongue. Hold hard, not so much. Today's going to be important. A drunken gun won't get us anywhere. Dick, it'll be light soon. Colin and the Major south and then east.
Dick Henderwood and Reggie Hughes west and then north. The vantage points are reached. The slaughter is soon to begin. 3/4 of a mile to the north, in a grove of small trees, an old bull sinks upon its knees, wearied, near to death. The hunters that fixed the snare won't come until the white men have gone. There is nothing but agony left to the bull who once led a mighty herd for 20 years. His pain is greater, longer than the herd. But the pain of every beast is condemned.
Right, there's Harry's first shot.
It cannot happen anymore. Not this wholesale slaughter. Rules have been made. Game departments have been formed. Trophies have to be registered. Permits are required. Man is more conscious of the dying of the last of the game. But in those years, for money. Reggie Hughes takes 12 elephants and stops.
Carry on, Reggie! What's the matter? Carry on!
But Hughes has killed 12. He will not take his total past 12. Will not shoot a 13th. For 3 days, the Arabao cut and hacked and divided the meat. They took out the great tusks, many of them brilliant specimens. It was a rich haul. The herd was destroyed, except one old bull. Less than a mile away, he had pulled and wrenched at his jail vine for close on 5 days. Death was near when he finally obtained release. His freedom was costly, and he sank in agony upon the floor of the tree grove. He trumpeted no more. He knew an overriding passion to quench his thirst. Food was unpalatable to him. The blistering sun made him long for the muddy hollow where water might be coaxed and kneaded, pressed and made to seep forth where a short time before no water was. This longing for water was all that is eternal in the elephant. No dreams of cemeteries. Just a desire to travel to where it is cool and safe. The ivory, once carried proudly by the members of the herd, is packed and tabulated and made ready for the journey back to where dollars will be given in exchange for something that once lived. But before this journey can be accomplished, another night descends. And once more, humans cannot sleep. This night is to be the night of the day of the 13th elephant. An hour before dawn, a man leaves the dying fires, the tents brought up from the truck with the alabao, the sleeping men, a rifle carried lightly, for only foolish men walk in the bush without means of protection. Rifle carried lightly. Hughes journeys away to where the night is free from the death smell, the stench of elephant fat, elephant meat, elephant. He walks gratefully towards the north. Just a short walk it's going to be, enough to clear his head. With the sun, they'll depart. 3 days, and they'll be at the escarpment. Then, after the journey back with water for the American truck, there'll be a way to where other men wait with money. Money that is always paid to those who slaughter to get white tusks.
The end, this is. No more. No more guns. 12 elephants. My share, that was 12. That's fair enough. That'll bring me enough loot for a fire. I don't need more than that'll bring me. Smell back there. Can't bear it. Never could bear it.
Reggie Hughes enters an avenue of young trees. A green avenue, like a road to adventure. The rifle trails from his right hand. Occasionally, he closes his eyes as he walks. Plenty of time yet before dawn. Good to be free from the camp and all the camp means. His mind idly contemplates what the ivory money may do for him. His mind winds slowly backwards to the dropping of the rifle in Dar es Salaam. But he refused the third light from the match. Can avoidance of an ill omen cancel out another? He glances up through the tree bar roof overhead, not noticing the bloody twine, like a hangman's emblem, hanging from the young, strong tree whose roots are nearly out of the ground. symbols of an epic struggle. He ignores. He doesn't see. It's all one now. Certainly he sees not the great bulk standing stock still 10 yards from the corded vine made by the Elabau for the trapping of giants. At this moment, he sees in the heavens a star shooting through the firmament at thousands of miles a second. Reggie breathes more rapidly and closes tight his eyes and wishes. Always wish upon a star's journey through the heavens. Bad luck will attend he who ignores such a sign. But the wish is only half made when Reggie's eyes open wide, and in the dimmest light he sees the bulk, the body, and then the head as it swings, and then the tusks as they swing, carving an arc through the gloom. For a brief moment he perceives the face, the domed head, and below the head where a trunk should be, but where no trunk is. But the man with the gun does not shoot. He is a dimmest statue in dimmest light.
Have been trapped by the natives. Might have been stuck here for days. Weeks. He didn't even shoot. The elephant's trunk's pulled right off its face.
An elephant unlike any other you've ever seen in the whole of your life. This elephant will have no trunk.
But why didn't he shoot or try to...
What did you say, Dick?
Nothing. There's nothing to bury. Let's go. Terrible thing with traps. Guns are clean. Quick.
Bring his gun. Don't drop it.
Join us again next week for another story of the African bushveld. It might be fact, it might be fiction, in General Motors on Safari. Brought to you by General Motors South African, manufacturers of Cadillac, Buick, Oldsmobile, Pontiac, Chevrolet, Beaumont, Vauxhall, Opel, Holden, Bedford, and GMC Motor Vehicles.